It's June 14th, 2015. The police have just found the body of Claudine Dee Dee Blanchard. She was found dead, and in a pool of what appeared to be dried blood, in the bedroom of her house in Greene County, Missouri. When the officials checked the house, there was no sign of her daughter, Gypsy Rose. They were especially worried because, according to Dee Dee, Gypsy suffered from leukemia, asthma, muscular dystrophy, and decreased cognitive development secondary to her premature birth. Neighbors were worried that she may have been abducted. They found Gypsy the next day, in Wisconsin with her boyfriend. Not only was she not abducted, but investigators concluded that she was actually an adult and didn't have any of the physical or mental health issues her mother claimed that she had had. After further investigation, those involved in the case began to suspect that Dee Dee suffered from Munchausen syndrome by proxy, a type of factitious disorder. Welcome back to the Hashtag Health Podcast. Today we're talking to Dr. Mark Feldman, a psychiatrist and international expert on factitious disorders. We'll be discussing Munchausen syndrome by proxy, and a new social media age term that he coined, called Munchausen by Internet.
My name is Mark D. Feldman. I'm a physician, specifically a psychiatrist, and I have appointments in the departments of psychology and psychiatry at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. My area of specialty for about 30 years has been medical deception as a whole, specifically Munchausen syndrome, Munchausen by proxy, and malingering, which I know we'll be talking about. And I find it fascinating, have never gotten bored with it, and that's why I'm looking forward to talking to you today.
Munchausen syndrome is a form of factitious disorder. Factitious disorder being the larger umbrella term that encompasses Munchausen syndrome and its related conditions. Munchausen syndrome was initially described in the early 1850s and was named after a fictional character, Baron von Munchausen. The character was known for telling tall tales, like fighting 40-foot crocodiles or riding cannonballs through the sky. These days, Munchausen syndrome is formally called factitious disorder imposed on self, according to the DSM-5. It's formally defined as falsification of physical or psychological signs or symptoms, or induction of injury or disease associated with identified deception in the absence of obvious external rewards. That was a mouthful, but it basically translates to deceiving others into believing that you have a physical or mental illness for reasons other than secondary gain. This means that you're not doing it for money. You're not doing it for time off work. You're doing it for some other reason. Though it's difficult to completely clarify the motivation of patients with Munchausen syndrome, it's generally agreed upon that the pretender feigns symptoms to receive affection and care. Now, I'm sure at least a few of us can relate to the idea of pretending to be more sick than we actually are. Big test at school the next day, maybe did something embarrassing at work or school and can't bear to face your peers. These situations are not really what we're getting at, though. They represent something different. So, we discussed Munchausen syndrome a little bit already. The related condition, also a subtype of factitious disorder, is called Munchausen's by proxy. In the DSM-5, it's termed factitious disorder imposed on another. For the purposes of this episode, we'll be referring to both as Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen syndrome by proxy, respectively. So, let's go over the latter. I'd be surprised if you haven't seen a TV show where Munchausen syndrome by proxy wasn't used as a plot device. On November 24th, 2020, Refinery29 published an article titled, "Why is Hollywood Obsessed with Killer Moms?" Their inspiration for the title must have been the numerous shows that feature moms with Munchausen syndrome by proxy. For example, in Hulu's new film titled Run, actress Sarah Paulson plays a character named Diane, who intentionally feeds her child muscle relaxers and other unnamed pills.
It's my job to take care of you when you need me. And you need me.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had never heard of Munchausen syndrome during medical school or residency. I didn't know a thing about it or Munchausen by proxy until I was assigned a Munchausen patient in about 1989. That really dates me, but she presented emergently because the staff in her cancer program had discovered that she never had cancer at all. She had claimed to have breast cancer, that she was terminal. She had dieted to lose 40 or 50 pounds as an authentic breast cancer patient might. She claimed to be undergoing chemotherapy and shaved her head and eyebrows. And she was a school teacher. The children dedicated their basketball season to her, hoping that she would live long enough to see the end of the season. She joined a breast cancer support group where she was one of the more confrontative members, telling people they weren't dealing assertively enough with their cancer. And after about a year and a half of doing this, it was discovered accidentally that she had never seen any of the doctors she claimed she had seen. So on an emergent basis, she was referred to a psychiatrist, which just happened to be me. I ended up admitting her to the hospital for 6 weeks and treating an underlying depression that was fueling her Munchausen behavior. And she did really well. I wrote up that case for publication and it got picked up by the Associated Press. And I won't belabor it, but since then, the media have become very, very interested in the subject. And so have healthcare professionals, especially when it comes to Munchausen by proxy. I called her a malingerer because I didn't know, I had never heard of factitious disorder or Munchausen syndrome. And that was a major deficit in my education, I now realize and realized at the time. It wasn't until I wrote up the case for publication as a case of malingered cancer that the reviews came back. They loved the paper, but said, this is a case of factitious disorder or Munchausen syndrome. And then I did a lot of research and found myself really enthralled by the subject. And again, I've been studying it ever since.
Over the years, many famous cases of Munchausen syndrome have entered the spotlight and received plenty of media coverage. As Dr. Feldman mentioned, he has been in the field since the end of the 80s. So we asked him, what's the most memorable case of Munchausen syndrome or Munchausen syndrome by proxy that you've seen in your career thus far?
It's probably the case of Wendy Scott, whose name has appeared in the public press, and she asked me always to use her real name, not a pseudonym. She's now deceased, but she was a maid in England and throughout the United Kingdom and also into the Scandinavian countries, and developed appendicitis. And for the first time in her life in the hospital, she got attention, care, and concern. And she loved it so much that she spent the next 12 years doing nothing other than traveling, getting admitted to hospitals. She had over 600 hospitalizations as a result, had 42 abdominal operations. She would go to emergency rooms and complain bitterly of extreme pain in her abdomen. And not knowing her history, they mostly only knew what she cared to tell them about her background. They would perform abdominal surgery, exploratory. Eventually, she had so many abdominal surgeries that she developed problems with adhesions and fistulae, and those required surgeries as well. So, and they contributed to the number 42. So she had the classic abdomen of somebody who's had a polysurgical career. Sadly, she was no longer taken seriously as a patient by any of the doctors who had heard of her, and she developed an authentic mass in her abdomen. And doctors noted it, but thought it was just scar tissue or that they would be embarrassed if they did more exploratory surgery and it turned out to be something she had done to herself. She ended up crossing the Atlantic and ended up in my hospital. We had been friends through email for years, but she came to the University of Alabama at Birmingham, the Center for Psychiatric Medicine, where I was medical director, and we instantly got her into surgery and found that she had terminal adenocarcinoma. that had grown to the point where she was terminal because nobody had intervened sooner. So she stayed in the hospital for several months, getting treatment, palliative care, and hospice, ultimately was able to return home to England and died about 2 weeks later. But she and I got to be very close, good friends, as well as physician-patient relationship that was strong. And she did all the media she could possibly do, including multiple articles in the New York Times about her, because she wanted to warn doctors not to dismiss a patient who presents the way she did just because they have Munchausen syndrome. They should still get a thorough exam, even if you know that it's likely you're being misled. We would do that for a murderer. So why do we not do it for Munchausen patients? And that was the main point she wanted to communicate in her final days. So she'll always stay with me. And when I think of Munchausen syndrome, I think of a few patients, but mostly I think of Wendy Scott.
When it comes to diagnosing Munchausen syndrome, you would be correct in assuming it's a long process. The first step is to exclude an unusual but dangerous presentation of a common medical condition. The second is to exclude somatic symptom disorders and malingering. Malingering we've already discussed, but somatic symptom disorders is a new term in this episode. In brief, somatic symptom disorder is when a form of mental illness causes one or more bodily symptoms, such as pain or tingling. These symptoms cause disproportionate levels of distress. Unfortunately, the boundaries between factitious disorders, somatization, and malingering are often hard to make clear, so arriving to a definitive answer is often quite difficult. Nevertheless, Munchausen's or Munchausen syndrome by proxy should be considered as a possible diagnosis if there's evidence of recurring illness without cause, if there's discrepancies between laboratory testing and clinical presentation, and if the patient doesn't express any concern regarding what would be painful and/or risky interventions. Let's say, though, that in this situation, you've done your due diligence and have performed a thorough workup. You've considered somatization and malingering, but you're convinced that Munchausen's is the right fit. So here comes the hard part, telling a patient that they have Munchausen syndrome.
Enter the room as a psychiatrist, but also have an internist with me. And I'd say, we agree with you that there's a serious problem here, but the problem isn't the one you would have us believe it is. The problem is not a physical one, it's a psychological one for which we do have treatment and which we will make available to you. And again, most of them say, doctor, you're crazy. But we sometimes get the gratification of a patient saying, okay, maybe I have been doing things to myself or lying to the doctors. And they engage in psychotherapy and sometimes do very well. Typically goes badly. They don't like being confronted. And many of them sign out of the hospital against medical advice or say, doctor, you're crazy. I'm never going to see you again. And they go somewhere else and doctor shop or hospital shop. But every once in a while, if we approach a patient in the right way, they either stop the behavior without admitting to it, but we can follow longitudinally and see that they stopped it, or they'll get psychotherapy. And part of that is they get regular visits with an internist or family doc so that we break the contingency between illness and getting to see a doctor. They might see the doctor every 6 weeks, regardless of whether they're having any problems or not. It's guaranteed that that slot will always be there for them. And eventually, they may not require that slot. Also, to the extent that they're after the attention of doctors, the psychotherapy provides a safe space where they can open up to a doctor, typically, or a psychologist with a PhD, or a social worker or a psychiatric nurse. Really, it can be any discipline as long as they've educated themselves about what Munchausen syndrome really is. Those patients, about a third of them will do well longitudinally, but many of them drop out of treatment because the behavior is like an addiction or a compulsion. And just as substance abusers relapse, these patients often relapse.
Okay, well, what else is out there in terms of treatment, other than regular scheduled visits and psychotherapy?
Well, if we can identify an underlying psychiatric disorder that is fueling the behavior, like a major depression or bipolar disorder, or even a psychotic disorder in some rare cases, then the prognosis does improve because we can use medications and cognitive behavioral therapy, other things like that, to remedy the underlying problem that's fueling the Munchausen behaviors. So as the depression, for example, gets better, the Munchausen behaviors go down. But it's historically, Munchausen syndrome has been viewed as untreatable. And I'm here to tell you that's really not true. It's also true that many of these patients report emotional neglect in childhood rather than overt abuse. And they found in their families of origin that they needed to be sick in order to get the family to pay any attention to them at all. And that becomes a pattern then that gets established in childhood and just grows more convoluted and severe as time goes on and they become young adults. And I do tend to think they're offering valid reports when they talk about emotional neglect. The borderline, as you mentioned, histrionic, narcissistic, the cluster B personality disorders, as they're called. That just means that they have chronic, maladaptive ways of trying to get their needs met. They haven't learned normal social skills, for example, so they may feel isolated and be isolated. So we often have to dig down deep, if the patient will allow us to find the personality disorder or other disorder that may be the key to unlocking the strengths that most of these patients have lurking beneath them.
Earlier on in the episode, we mentioned the many shows that have come out in recent history that feature moms with Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Now, some of these stories are based on real incidents, including an HBO documentary called Mommy, Dad, and Dearest. It's about the case of Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Rose that we talked about at the start of the episode, and features Dr. Feldman.
Well, I actually appeared in the HBO documentary called Mommy, Dad, and Dearest, which was the first depiction. And I got a lot of feedback and requests for more information as a result of that one. That's probably the most extreme Munchausen by proxy case in history, because Gypsy Rose did kill or arrange for her mother to be killed by her boyfriend, who had many problems of his own. And it saw the light of day because it was so dramatic and upsetting and startling. But it did a lot. The act included, which was fictionalized somewhat, it did a lot to inform the public about Munchausen by proxy, such that virtually every true crime show on TV has featured Munchausen by proxy at some point. And it's only growing. There are theatrical releases that have that as a plot device, some entirely fictional TV shows that feature Munchausen by proxy. I'm kind of wondering when it's going to end, but it's showing no signs. And I guess overall that's good as long as it's a good depiction. And the act did a very good job, I thought, in staying as true to the story as they could. They did not talk to anyone in the family, however. And so it could have been better informed had they done that. But for legal reasons, I guess they weren't allowed to talk to the family. And that goes into entertainment law and things I know nothing about. It's interesting, too, that she said that she felt freer in prison, where she did get a 10-year sentence, than she did with her own mother. She's developed skills and education in prison. There has been an effort to have her 10-year sentence reduced to 8.5 or even less, but that hasn't succeeded so far.
Dr. Feldman states that the case of Dee Dee Blanchard is probably one of the most severe cases of Munchausen syndrome by proxy in history. But is Dee Dee Blanchard typically what one would expect to see when thinking about people with Munchausen syndrome by proxy? Analyses of patients with Munchausen syndrome by proxy show that the majority are young, between the ages of 25 to 32, and female. In fact, 92 to 100% are female. and a vast majority, over 90%, are the mother of the child. Many people who have Munchausen by proxy have a history of sexual or physical abuse, have comorbid personality disorders, mood disorders, and somatoform disorders. Another interesting piece is that a significant number, around 15 to 20%, report employment or training in a healthcare profession. So far, we've asked Dr. Feldman about Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen by proxy. He spoke about symptoms, famous cases, causes, and about how physicians manage patients with these disorders. Next, we asked Dr. Feldman about Munchausen by internet, a term that he coined.
Coined it in 2000, just as Munchausen by internet, MBI. And that's developed a life of its own. It's gone far beyond me. I wrote about Munchausen by internet for a medical journal, the Southern Medical Journal, talking about not just cases and the fact that people go online and lie about having various ailments to solicit attention and sometimes gifts and other things. I never thought the media would pick up on it, but once they did, they ran with it such that I get inquiries about Munchausen by internet and doing media about it. Right now, yesterday, I did a BBC documentary about it. I don't know the details of it, but what they're planning to show, but apparently they do have a patient who engaged in this behavior who's willing to talk to them. There's also a Reddit group for exposing Munchausen by internet patients, exposing their real identities. And that's obviously very controversial. But they feel that if somebody goes online and others make treatment decisions based on the lies that are being told about treatment, that the posters need to account for what they've done. And there's a moral outrage, it seems, that many people feel when they discover they've been duped online into giving hours and hours and hours of online attention. Munchausen by internet posters may also do it in real life. So they may do both, enact seizures in real life and then lie about having epilepsy in online.
When you're watching a TV series featuring a story where the character has Munchausen or Munchausen by proxy, your experience is engineered by the makers of the show in a certain way, and you likely start to feel resentment towards the characters. But how do healthcare providers feel when dealing with a real-life patient that may have Munchausen or Munchausen syndrome by proxy? Do they feel resentment in the same way that you do when you watch those characters on TV?
I think it's important to get a psychiatric consult for the staff if, in fact, they have difficulty managing their feelings. And again, I'm dating myself, but back in, I think, 1994, I wrote an article called Countertransference in Factitious Disorder, because it evokes such strong feelings in caregivers when they encounter a patient who has lied to them or is continuing to skirt the truth in order to mobilize their attention and care. So a psychiatrist, typically a consultation liaison psychiatrist, who's knowledgeable about the subjects, can give relevant reading materials and in-service education to nursing staff, medical staff, others. And that can be really helpful in nipping in the bud any harmful attitudes people develop towards these patients. Well, I think people miss the diagnosis all the time. I think it's vastly underreported. The American Psychiatric Association says that 1% of patients admitted to medical surgical hospitals, in fact, are there due to factitious disorder, 1 out of 100. So that's, when you think about the health care costs associated with Munchausen syndrome, 1% can work out to many millions of dollars in the U.S. having been misapplied or even frankly wasted in pursuing a diagnosis that doesn't exist for that particular patient. So I think before one decides that it's extremely rare, one has to take into account what the American Psychiatric Association says, and also the fact that if you become known in the field, you hear about a new case every day. And that's true for me. I get emails every day about cases, usually from family members and friends who don't know what to do. And this can involve Munchausen syndrome or Munchausen by proxy. And so people have to expend some effort to find me online and then send me an email. So I think, again, it's the tip of the iceberg. And this has got to be much more common than we've ever recognized.
The term Munchausen syndrome by proxy is often used synonymously with the term medical child abuse. In line with that, we wondered how child custody and legal proceedings are handled in cases of Munchausen syndrome by proxy compared to other cases where psychiatric illness is less of a factor.
I think courts, child protective services, and the police know almost nothing about Munchausen by proxy, whether you call it Munchausen by proxy or factitious disorder imposed on another or medical child abuse. I prefer the term medical child abuse in legal settings because it's descriptive. Saying Munchausen by proxy sounds mysterious and it doesn't tell you what it really is. Medical child abuse is very clear to judges and juries, and so we've had a lot more success in protecting children when we use that term. And in fact, there's a book called Medical Child Abuse that advocated strongly for that term. Part of the credibility of the field has been undermined by the fact that there are so many terms that are used to refer to this behavior. I once tried to list as many as I could, and there may be 15 or 20 used across the world to refer to the same behavior. But I think if we can settle on maybe Munchausen by proxy and medical child abuse and factitious disorder imposed on another, all of which have slight differences, we will be moving the field forward. But it's true that in courts, these mothers are given slaps on the wrist if they even wind up in court. It's not treated seriously enough. They may often lose custody of their children, but they're not penalized criminally, or they may not even be prosecuted at all. I've seen so many cases like that where I've testified passionately, or others have, and the judges say, well, this poor mother is going to have termination of parental rights. That's enough. We don't need to send her to jail as well.
So then, can people with Munchausen syndrome by proxy, where there's a child involved, receive a not criminally responsible judgment on their initial offense?
That's a powerful question, and I think that comes down to a lack of knowledge and education. And it was one of the reasons I opposed adding factitious disorder imposed on another to the DSM, because I feared that perpetrators would come forward and say, I'm the helpless victim of this mental disorder, factitious disorder imposed on another, and therefore can't be held responsible. In reality, that I'm not aware of a single case where they've successfully argued not guilty by reason of insanity plea based upon that claim. But it's coming up. I'm hearing about more cases, some murder cases in which a child has died as a result of medical child abuse. And the only way out, really, considering the obvious guilt of the perpetrator, is for her to claim to be mentally ill. But again, at least in the U.S., I have not seen that work. Well, I do have a website with lots of links to other credible resources, to books and magazine, newspaper articles, journal articles at munchausen.com. And that's munchausen.com. And it's being totally revamped right now. So it should be much easier to use in the near future.
That concludes our episode on Munchausen syndrome and other factitious disorders. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd greatly appreciate it if you could support us on social media and subscribe to our show. This episode was written by Jay Shaw and Mary Nguyen and is made possible with the generous support of Accel Labs and the Canadian Federation of Medical Students. Thanks for listening and see you next time.